Talk Show.
It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 574.
Our mate Simon Taylor back in the building.
The prestigious 574.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's an
anniversary number.
It's a real thing with numbers. I feel like as you start getting through them, I don't pick up on it, but it's a very common thing for guests to bring up the number.
This year we've got episode 666.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you should do something special for that.
What's people's usual aversion to that? It's just like the devil. Is that right?
It's devil's number. Yeah, it's just biblical.
What's the number in the hotel that they remove? Level
13.
Level 13. That's nothing to do with that. That's just bad luck.
I guess so. Yeah, it's so funny that people really put a lot of weight on them. If you have 666, you should at least all dress up as the devil.
Yeah. The Grim Reaper or something.
That'd be a great episode.
Simon, when do you think people should stop saying Happy New Year?
Never. I think we should just do it endlessly forever.
Well, it's like, you know, the second, that first week back at work for a lot of people this week.
2 weeks.
It's a funny power move in June.
Yeah, 14th. Happy New Year. Yeah. Yeah.
If you did it in July, people would think you're talking about the financial year and then you're a real dork. I imagine Barefoot gets around it. Happy New Year. All right, Barefoot.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we've got an accountant here. Have you had Barefoot Investor on the show?
No, not yet. But he's been in the studio. He's working on a Foxtel documentary and
Stana's being edited.
Oh, so he wants it widely viewed.
Yeah, exactly.
We did a bunch of. He's a client of ours, so he's coming on the show at some point. But
great.
And so he.
I love the bucket system.
Yeah, and so he actually he brought in a bucket. We were doing some
not just one filming. Josh, multiple
he brought
buckets.
Three. And it's a real
bucket. You're doing your finance wrong if it's one bucket.
Yeah.
That's how I used to do my finances.
Yeah, but he actually, it was an issue with continuity having so many buckets because he would put the bucket on the desk and then the director would say, can you remove the bucket just because we need to get a clean shot?
Yeah.
And then
we're going to feature in that.
You definitely will because Tommy basically did a series of videos for people in school, like kids in schools. Mm. And so he created and produced the videos for that.
It gets shown to the kids before the class. So there were six videos. Did you learn much about finance in school?
Nothing. And it took me ages to, I guess I was forced to do it because I was self-employed because I was doing entertainment. And so, waiting for corporate gigs, I understood cash flow because I didn't have anything to eat for 3 weeks. I need money now.
The pain is the solution.
But
right?
I also feel
it's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's just learning how to use, a spreadsheet. Well, I learned Excel and stuff at school. And then actually
did you pass? Because I didn't.
Oh, in really?
Year 12 IT, it's the reason I failed.
Right. But Excel is a lifesaver. If you can get automate things on Excel.
Yeah.
It's the best. And so whenever I have comedians say, oh, I've got any advice, I'm like, learn Excel. Yeah. They're like, nah, about my stand-up. I'm like, it's not important.
Yeah.
Just get your finance right. Learn how to budget. Learn how to know that, if I'm not making any money this month, how long can I survive without money? So I lived in New York for 8 months or whatever. And I knew exactly how much money to spend per day if I wanted to survive New York without having to get any other work. So if I knew, if I don't pick up any gigs in the next 8 months, I can survive until this day spending this much money. And that is my way of dealing with what people freak out about is in comedy and entertainment. They're like, dude, how do you live not knowing where your next paycheck is? Excel spreadsheet.
Work it out. Do you think that for you that system actually motivates you to get the work? I mean, the other system is don't think about it and just fucking hope that money comes in.
Yeah, that's I've seen people but really failing.
Knowing the safety of, I know 8 months I can last a year. Mm. So are you going as hard or does it motivate you?
So it'll change the priority of the projects. Mm. So if I'm struggling, then I'm like, or if I know I'm going to struggle soon, I'm like, right, I need to focus on getting some corporate gigs and some club gigs and selling merch and really pushing things that aren't that enjoyable, but will get money on the table. If I know I've got 6 months or whatever, I'm like, great, you know, maybe write a new show. Maybe I'll work on like a, you know, a sketch, you know, web sketch or something. So I can do it in that time because I know that the money's not, yeah, not needed. So it will change my priority of project for sure.
What did you spend your money on in New York? Where did it all go?
Rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bought a bike to get around. And then, yeah, food. And then I guess doing like things you can only do in New York, the museums there. Saw Spider-Man in New York. That was the best city to see it in.
What about food?
Food, of course.
Dollar pizza? Is that like
– That was my favorite thing.
Yeah.
2 a.m. dollar pizza because the pizza doesn't matter. It's the hot sauce that you put on it.
Sure. So and just, especially at 2 a.m. When you're meant to be in bed.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly. It's the best.
What was the schedule as a comedian living in New York? Because I hear about people doing 6 shows a night and 5 days a week.
Yeah, I think it's better in Melbourne because it's too flooded in New York. What the problem with New York comedy at the moment is entry level is impossible. There's 10,000 comedians and they all want gigs. So the rooms start charging open mic comedians to do a spot. So it's $5. You want to do open mic room? It's $5 and the bar is only having us if you buy a drink as well. So one drink minimum. Wow. So you've spent $11 now. Plus the, you know, tip to the bar person to go do a spot with for like 3 minutes with all these other open mic comics who are on their phones who aren't listening or are walking out like and back. So terrible if you just want to work out new material. Because I use open mics in Melbourne to work new material out. But I think in New York it's almost like as soon as you don't need to do them, you don't do them anymore. You get in with a club. So in Australia, we don't have enough clubs to just play at clubs every single night. So I'll do the Comics Lounge for a week. That's great. But then the next week I'll do some bar shows and that's great. And then the next week I'll do some open mics to work on new material. Then I'll do festivals. So I think New York is good if you're in with a club and you can do that club regularly.
So it's, you need to be of a certain caliber.
Yeah,
already,
you need to be passed. They call it being passed at a club. Yeah. So I got passed at Broadway comedy. So I could go and do Broadway, you know, nearly every night of the week.
What happens when you get passed? What is there? Ceremony? Is there
stop
charging you $11?
It's $2.50.
Yeah, exactly. You just you feel like you're now
worthy.
No, not even. Now you're competing with all the other dudes who have passed, you know. So
they turn your mic on.
Yeah.
And so what's that like? Is it actually, so that's a term that's used?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Bigger in America, we don't really use it in Australia.
And so what's the, like, how do you know that you've been passed? So you've been passed? What does
passed.
That mean?
Like, yeah, you've passed the test? They'll say something like, I got passed at the store, meaning they will give me regular gigs now.
Okay.
Because it's open mic. Until you're passed and now you get regular gigs.
And then you get paid for the regular gigs or no? Okay, so it's still like the dudes in LA at the Comedy Store, the big names, are they getting paid?
I don't think so. If they are, it's something tokenistic like $25 or something like that.
But then classic Joe Rogan goes to the store, it's like.
Yeah, but they're going to work out material. So, if you've got a profile and you're going to go on tour and charge people $30 a ticket, you better have good material, right? Yeah. And it better be stuff they haven't heard before. So to do that, you go to the clubs or you go to open mics or you go to bar shows and you work out material. So this month for me is like big time trying to get material, you know, worked out. So I've got like a list of all this new material, all these premises I want to try. I was thinking I was just going to run, you know, spend this hour because that's all I'm doing in January, working on material. I thought, I'll come and I'll just work my show out on the show.
You can do
on
that.
The show. Okay. Yeah, let's start. Joke one. Yeah, is that how it works?
Exactly. Right, I'll show you my list. I'll go.
Okay, yeah.
He's in my phone. But the problem with this
is that a Pixel or what is that?
This is a Samsung Galaxy S10. I am not sponsored by them. But Samsung, if you're out there. Yeah, nice. Best phone for comedy. that's kind of true because you can have, when you record your sets, you can go to record record to text. So you can record your set and then have your set on.
Someone
text.
Was telling us about this with the phone this week.
And he was saying the great thing is like if a bird makes a noise, it will then like tag it bird.
What?
Mm.
I didn't know. Really.
Yeah. That's like the Google one.
Not on sure Android. How many birds are at.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it tags it heckler.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about yeah, laughs? Exactly. Could it tag if there's laughs?
A-hole.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That'd be so
yeah,
good.
It's just like.
Well, you know what would be amazing if it actually like measured the laughs on how on a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So then you could cut all the jokes that are below 5.
Yes. What good. About the idea of having like this is probably a horrendous idea, an app. Everyone's going to be on their phone anyway. Mm. Just sort of like you see it in like what are those groups called where it's like people are reviewing stuff, but they could press a button if it's funny or not.
Focus groups and test groups. Yeah.
That could be fun. And so what app are you using there?
This is just the Keep notes.
Okay, Google Keep, yeah.
I accidentally deleted something.
All your jokes. Start again.
Oh, no. Anyway, it's fine. My new stand-up set. First premise is I love my girlfriend, so that's not getting any laughs. People are like, all right, whatever, man.
Yeah.
No.
Is this your gratitude list?
yeah, exactly. Pee the bed. There you go. Manly, super boyfriend, babysitter, meet girlfriend's dad, dip. Yeah, that's like the tobacco they put in their mouth in the South. Okay, my girlfriend's from Kentucky. The word well. Playing the game Rook. It's a card game. Texting her dad. So that's like a new set. That's just the set list of material I need to try. And last night I did the babysitter one was I'm worried about having kids because of money. Mm-hmm. And like,
amen.
Yeah.
It's a true worry.
It's a real worry. So apparently like babysitters can be $30 an hour.
Yeah, man.
So if you are like, what's that? 3, 6, 9, 12. So $120 for 4 hours. But what I figured, right, there are some return flights to Adelaide for $90. So if you drop your kid off at the airport, put them on the flight, go out, have your night, pick them up at the airport 4 hours later, you've saved some sweet cash.
Oh, that's a great idea. But it has to be returned. Is it return?
Return.
Well, they do offer service to sort of look, it depends on the age, look after the kid.
Well, I thought they were just going to Adelaide. Yeah, well, it's just like if you're getting to Adelaide.
I said return. Yeah,
okay, so need return.
All right. Well, there you go. That's some good feedback on the joke. I need to go.
It's return. So you're getting there and back.
Yes.
Yeah? That's like the important part of it. Am I going to
do it? So you get there and back for all you Joshes in the crowd who are going to nitpick this joke.
Because there's something else. Like you could say, oh, you know, you can get a flight to Adelaide, you know, $90 or whatever. So it's sorted. And then the kid's in Adelaide, so you don't have to worry about them anymore.
You can whack them on the Frankston line, 2 hour return trip.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty.
That's a good
that's
idea.
That's really good. What's that, 450?
Do you know,
no, it's probably.
Do you know how many PSOs?
Zone 2.
Maybe talk about the PSOs. Like there's PSOs at Dandy State. Like I've worked out Pakenham line. It's getting too nuanced. See, I had too many layers.
And so this is a list that you've got, right? So how much do you go into the joke before you go up on stage and give it a crack?
It'll just be a premise. So I'll write down a bunch of premises throughout, you know, my life. Sometimes
is that your girlfriend
I'll wake up
in the
morning.
By the way, what is she drinking?
That is my girlfriend. I think she's drinking coconut water on my phone. The background.
I thought it was a milkshake.
It's pretty embarrassing.
So you got the dot points and then premises, which elaborate.
So a premise. Like for example, I'm just trying to find something that would be. So many of them are
the
bad.
Josh won't pick apart.
No, so many of them are bad.
Can you lean into a bad one? What's your least favourite joke?
Okay, this is my least favourite premise at the moment. Yep. Old people don't go to therapy. My generation goes to therapy for everything. Like, I stubbed a toe. I need 3 weeks to, you know, come to terms with myself.
Trauma.
Yeah, yeah. But old people don't go because they were like, you know, when I was young, we never had the therapist. We just pushed our feelings down until we lashed out at the barista for not making the coffee hot enough. Like that's, and then, so anyway, that's just the premise of the like older people that never went to therapy. They're like, no, we just got on with it.
Just got angry.
So that's a premise that I don't think is funny enough yet. Yeah. I haven't put it on stage yet because I just don't think the idea is strong enough. But there's something there. I'll just write something like that down.
And if
I think it's good enough, I'll put it on stage. And if it gets a laugh, I'll keep working on it. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to work on a joke too long. Like just say I spend a day working on one premise like that. I get on stage and no one thinks the premise is funny. Well, now I've wasted a day on a joke that I'm not even going to do anymore.
So premise first.
Premise first. Have maybe one line. Try it out on stage. If that gets good traction, then I'll expand on it.
Shit yourself. Is that a good premise to start with? Shitting yourself.
Shitting yourself. Yeah, it can be. I know some comics who have some good gear on that.
Yeah.
Is it a comic? Like, I know Tropfest was always frowned upon because Tropfest films always had, there was always one film that had like poo humor.
That's really funny.
Is that a thing within stand up? Is it like, does everyone have a poo humor joke?
Well, I don't know. Well, there's different, I guess, genres of comedy in a sense, styles. So, yeah, I'd say styles. So, some people are blue, meaning they're crass and they'll do that sort of humor. No, but, you know, farts are always funny, embarrassing stories. It depends how it's done. So, for example, like Billy Connolly does a bit about having to get a colonoscopy. So, he takes the meds, the laxatives the night before. And he just does this amazing bit. He's like, I'm sitting on the couch and I feel rumble and I run the thing. And then I'm like, like he's doing all the sounds. So you think, oh, that's base humor because he's just talking about like diarrhea and cold. Yeah. But the real bit is about him worrying about his health. He's like, oh, dude, I might have prostate cancer. Yeah. Oh, man, I might have whatever. So he's... it's actually deriving from fear and he's like, and this is, you know, so now I'm freaked out because I got to get this thing done and now I'm shitting everywhere. And
so what's the premise then? So if you were to work out what are the layers of a joke, do you think?
Of that joke?
Of a joke. So there's the premise. So a premise is?
What it's about.
And so would that be?
How people could relate to it? Is that what you're trying to do? Is like?
Not necessarily. Like I don't, you know, you don't. I think I'm reverse engineering it right now, but I don't think you sit there and construct it, you know, in a like a technical sense. Mm. You just go, that's an okay idea. I'll do it in front of a crowd and let them decide. So the audience is doing all the work. I'm just saying the thing that I thought of and then doing what the audience tells me to do. It's like they're the gauge. I'll try that. I tried that, you know, the babysitter on the plane last night. And people, that got a huge reaction. I didn't think it would get that big a reaction. So now I'm like, oh, well, I will do that. But if it was left up to me, if I had never heard the audience, I might have thought, I don't know if it's that good an idea. I'll ditch it. So I always just get an idea, got to put it in front of an audience and they decide. So the premise is just what it's, you know, what the joke's about. And then you got to have, you know, you got to have punchlines in it. You got to get to punchlines as quickly as possible.
Premise, is it the absurdity as well? So taking the plane example, wondering if we could layer it. So the absurdity is that it's cheaper to put the kid on a plane and fly in the air.
Yeah.
And go back and forth, return, than it is to.
But it's also a truism. So truism is like if it's technically true, then it's absurd, but it's also real.
So from a layer's point of view, would you potentially say, and you know, once they get there, I've just looked online, they can rent a car for $12.
You could do that. If you want to go down that line. I'll give you an example of a routine right now. Do you want me to do a routine that goes down that absurd? All right. So biggest problem in my life as a millennial, sometimes my phone storage is full. And it's always too many photos, right? You have like 7,000 photos and you can't delete them all in one go, especially with an Apple phone. You try to delete them, you know, they make you delete them one at a time. You get bored, throw it out, buy another iPhone. And, you know, there's no official response online. You look up, how do I delete all my photos in one go? The Apple doesn't give a shit. Like you find some 20-minute YouTube video with some 8-year-old kid who's like, hey guys, don't forget to like and subscribe. And you're like, just tell me how to delete the photos in one go. And he sends you to some weird website. You got to download some jailbreaking program. You get the program and it's like, do you want to delete all your photos in one go? I'm like, that's exactly what I want to do. They go, well, that's a premium edition. That's $14.99. You're like, oh, great. So you borrow dad's credit card and you buy the program. And then all of a sudden the program's like, this program's not compatible. compatible with your operating system. You're like, why did you tell me that after I paid for it? So you go back to the original website, try to get your money back, but there's no, you know, help center. There's no contact form. There's just some address in Russia. So you head to Russia, and when you get to Russia, the cab driver Boris picks you up. And he's like, want to make some money? You're like, who doesn't want to make money, Boris? So he sets you up in a corner of Moscow selling drugs to the local expats because you speak English and everyone loves an Aussie. And the head of the Russian mafia commissions you go to in the enemy turf and take them out, so it frees up some of the, you know, area for you to deal drugs. You don't exactly know what you're doing, but you grab an AK-47 because you feel better with a bit of weight behind you. And you go into the enemy turf and you've seen John Wick, so you're like, brrr, brrr, and you got blood on your hands that'll never wash off. But the head of Russian mafia is like, you did well. You can marry my daughter. And you don't really buy into that patriarchal bullshit because you're pretty woke, but hey, a promotion's a promotion. So you're at the altar and Katya's coming down the aisle. She looks beautiful. You're like, oh my God, I lucked out. So you make love on your wedding night, and all of a sudden she's pregnant. 9 months later, you rush to the hospital and she's in labor and she gives birth and it's a baby and it's a boy. You're like, oh my God, I'm a dad. I'm a first time dad. This is the greatest moment of my life. And you go to take a selfie with the newborn child and you're like, ah, fuck, my storage is full. So that's taking it that's to the an absurd. Absurd. That's the absurd one.
Yeah.
So right. It starts with observational, mm-hmm. like.
And because you're waiting for it to be brought back to the thing, which that's the punchline, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So in that, that's an example of an observation of like, oh, don't you hate it when your storage is full? Mm-hmm. Apple doesn't let you delete photos. Mm-mm. People go, oh, so true. That's relatable, but it's not that funny yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yes, I relate, and you might get a laugh, but then where you go from there. So that's an example of going, I'll take it to an absurd place. So I like it in that sense, but some jokes you do, some jokes you don't.
Do you like improvisation?
Yeah, I do, but I think when people are paying, you know, $30 to see a stand-up, they want to see the best stuff. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I feel.
Yeah.
But sometimes you go see like Ross Noble and you want to see him go wild.
Yeah.
So watching the Kevin Hart documentary recently, someone said to him, you're saying jokes but they're not connect. They're not you. We don't know anything about you. Mm. They're not personal. I mean, so there's the improv, which is – sort of bringing in just you're making shit up and then you've got the personal style approach as a comedian that's very much revealing about yourself. Where do you think you land in terms of how much you bring yourself and honesty? How much does that play a part in your comedy?
Yeah, it's a big deal, I think, because I got to run a new show every year. I do a new hour every year. And some years you're just like, I just need to fill the time. So you're putting stuff in that's not perfectly you. I had a joke recently that was about an old man trying to use a Dyson hand dryer. And it was getting laughs, but I listened to it back and I'm like, I'm just making fun of an old man.
Yeah.
And it's not, that's not me. I'm not like that. So I've kind of cut the bit even though it gets good laughs.
And now, you also have Dyson as a brand. So sponsorship, so you can't mention that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's got to go. They actually come off well. I say I was using the Dyson hand dryer the other day at a public bathroom. I didn't even use the bathroom. I was just there for the dryer. That's a good setup.
Then
it goes into like an old man didn't know how to do. I don't know how to do it. I can't put it. Oh, help me, young man. And it's not a great. It's not me. I don't like it. And so that's going. But then some jokes like the one I just told you, I really like that because I enjoy flights of fancy and, you know, I'm a millennial, so I got a lot, you know, I worry about tech. I know a lot about it, like even the references throughout about the kid on YouTube, like and subscribe. That's something that we get, but maybe slightly older generation don't know the catchphrase, don't forget to like and subscribe.
Yeah, John Wick reference I liked.
Yeah, John Wick reference and that sort of stuff. So that's,
well, it's also the absurdity that just he kills everybody. Like he's just fucking shooting and kills everyone.
Yeah, exactly. You've seen John Wick, so you know what to do.
Yeah.
So saying those things reflects who I am and they will get bigger laughs and because people go, yes, I feel like I'm learning about him. But if I go out and go, aren't old people idiots with technology, they might get laughs, but I think afterwards it would leave a bad taste in people's mouth and go, oh, you know, that's not, you know, whatever. Mm. Like,
In terms of, so we did Epps 500 live show, first live show we've done of that, you know, that scale, had about 80 people in the room. And we got a lot of laughs. We're not comedians, but I think there's something about a live audience that sort of gets you on your seat. Mm. Do you think that's a thing? Is it like the live thing is not like, say, if we were listening to a comedy set without a laugh track behind it? So you're listening to it raw as you're in the audience, but no one else is there but you and the earbuds.
Yeah.
Do you think it's still as funny as it is live?
I don't know scale, but it's certainly like the psychology of it is like social proof. Mm. And like if you hear people laughing, you're more likely to think it's funny. But people can pick up on it if it's fake. Like people hate canned laughter because they're like, stop trying to trick me into liking it. It's not funny.
Yeah.
But if it feels legit and it feels organic and real, then yeah, I think it increases your enjoyment of a thing. But it also changes your timing. So I think you guys say you're not comics, but you're funny guys, but also you're good at listening. And so when you two get in front of a crowd, you will listen to the audience and respond, and like that's really what all a comedian is doing. They're saying something and listening and going, oh, okay, I'm going to keep doing that. Yeah. So I think if you've got that basic skill of listening, because you can see actors sometimes are bad at comedy, certainly initially, because they're not used to listening to a crowd like that. They're used to being focused on, you know, their script and what they're saying and locking in with one person and maybe responding to that one person. But with a crowd, it can be different. Maybe TV actors. I think play actors are different, theatre actors are different. But yeah, so I would say the laughter helps you. And I think listening to it, if you're listening to the podcast with the laughter, I think it's, definitely more enjoyable to feel like, you know, things are getting big laughs. Mm.
Well, yeah. Last time you were on the show, did you mention it on the show? Or was it outside? You talked about the key person of influence, which your sister got you?
Yeah, my sister got me. So I thought, oh, guys, start of the year, let's, you know, give our businesses a kickstart.
Yeah.
Top five things to do.
Amazon.com best selling book.
That's probably propaganda.
But it's like it looks like it's a gold badge.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it looks real. What else does it say?
It's the revised edition.
Uh-huh.
It's the 5-step method to become one of the most highly valued and highly paid people in your industry.
And look at this, right? You got all these red people. Mm-hmm. But you want to be the blue guy.
I want to be that blue guy.
How do I be the blue guy?
So the blue guy is on the top of the world and he's doing some form of salute.
And all the red guys look sad.
Yeah.
And they got their arms crossed or upset. On their hips. Yeah, they're not doing great. So how to be a blue guy.
I love it.
So I wanted to...
have you read it back to front?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. But I wanted to implement some things now in January with you guys and then come on the show again. If I'm welcome.
Well, if you're a blue guy, you bloody are.
You can be a part of the blue crew.
The blue crew.
Maybe like a blue man group. And I want to see if you guys implement them because I know you guys care about this stuff. Have you read it?
So I've got it on my bedside table.
So it's as good as read.
Yeah.
It's as good as read.
Definitely.
You've read it when they come round.
Yeah. Actually, it's a lie. I don't have a bedside table. It's on the floor. But the next to my bed, which is neat. We need bedside tables though. But interestingly, your revised one, bit thicker than mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
there you go. Well, I get the real info.
You've got the updated shit.
You get the outdated stuff.
Get to be a blue guy, but quicker than you will.
Yeah.
All right, I'll read you this bit, all right? We're living in a very different world today than we were just a decade ago. So true.
It's so true.
So true of every...
That's a truism.
That's such a truism.
2010,
We're at the beginning of a whole new era. We are no longer in the industrial age. We are in a new economy that's digital, global, intangible, more meaningful and very entrepreneurial. Everything has changed and so must you.
Hashtag like and subscribe.
Exactly. Don't forget to like and subscribe.
He's got illustrations.
Oh, man. You
being an accountant. What the man yells at the other man.
I think it's a boy yelling at a man.
I don't understand the...
Yeah. You know, looking good going nowhere. I know an accountant. He is a great accountant. However, he's not happy and I know why. When he was 18 years old, fresh out of high school, he became an accountant. I'm sure this is all about. Today, he's frustrated. I think what the best stuff in this is the difference between key people of influence are vital people, not functional people. People who are performing a vital role see themselves as aligned to the result rather than the process. So this is talking about, like, are you replaceable in a job? Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're an accountant or whatever, or you're working in a company, you're doing like camera work in a company or something like that, can you be replaced the next day? Like, yeah, we can get another dude to – we get another camera operator. But if you're like the engine behind it, you know, the ideas, like you come up with – you're coming up with ideas, you're devising strategy, you're driving a company and where it's going, you're not replaceable.
Do you think there's a difference between thinking you're irreplaceable mm-hmm. and actually be irreplaceable? Because I've left roles and said, these fuckers aren't going to find someone as good as me. Like
in terms of on like what is your function. So if your function is like, yeah, like, you know, editing or whatever, like they might not find someone as good an editor as you or as fast as you. So that, you know, their production may drop, but they'll find someone, you know, the quality may drop. But in terms of like, if you're creating new and interesting ways to edit for the brand that are, you know, going to make the brand stand out and get more attention, and you're an ideas man behind that, well, then you're not replaceable in terms of your personality and what you bring to that specific innovation.
You almost need to be like multidimensional. Like you need to steal from a bunch of different areas, right? Go on. The other interesting thing. For the accountant, they've still got 6 months before they have to wait for their New Year's resolutions. They've got time. Happy New Year, July 1.
We've got some exercises in the book.
What sort of exercises?
Who do you know who shows up as a functional person to their job?
Functional. What is the functional meaning again?
They just
do the job.
They just do the job as required.
They're a cog. They just, they're in and it turns.
Yep.
Who do I know? I think a lot of people do.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, stop looking at Mr. 97, Josh.
He's definitely not a cog. He's the opposite of a cog. Or he's at least
a flog.
He's two cogs at once, which is very hard to do.
Yeah.
No, I think he's a proprietary cog.
Right.
Only works in certain machines.
Right.
But he works in our machine?
Yeah. But the thing is, like,
I'm here to save you. This book is for you.
You won't work in other machines, is what Josh is saying.
I'm saying, like, we're like Sony.
Yeah.
It's the battery works with us.
Canon.
Or you're the abusive partner that's telling the woman that you won't find anyone else.
Yeah.
I've come and I've blown up the production.
Here we go. No.
Who do you know who is currently a vital person where their ideas steer the business?
No, that's actually 97. Yeah, right. In all seriousness.
What are some of the differences you notice between them?
So, we need an example of two different people.
Okay, the cog in the machine versus the vital. So the vital person will do shit that's not their job.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Because if you just do the job, that is jobs that are normally created are functional. Like if you're just doing your job description, that is a functional description. Whereas being vital is like 97, like when he does the show notes and stuff, functional. Doing like he did a tour of the studio that we filmed.
Mm-hmm.
He was on camera. His personality being in it.
Yeah.
Or what personality is there? Vital.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. Well, that's probably true of like, not to bring up another podcast show, but like like Joe Rogan, whatever. He's got Jamie in the booth doing all that stuff, and he can have a producer and interchangeable. But the fact that Jamie has become a personality and an icon is more vital because he's now bigger than, you know.
Just the job.
Bigger than
if
the
you
job.
Just, yeah, if it was just a job description, you need to be able to turn on the live streaming.
Mm.
You need to like Google that stuff is like replaceable. The vital stuff is being a
reliable source for people, because when Joe Rogan says, Jamie, can you bring that up? Mm-hmm. The audience trusts.
He's not going to go on Bing.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, a radio anchor, have we had both of these people on our show? We haven't. Dan Gaundy.
Mm-hmm. Gaundy,
so Dan was an anchor on Nova.
Yeah.
Got replaced by Dan Anstey.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Literally, I know them both and I started listening, and then one week I hear another one, they're saying Dan. I'm like, They've just fucking replaced a Dan with a Dan and they sound very similar. Literally, how insulting. Because
they were playing functional roles. But now they're not. They're both killing it. Doing.
Yeah, they're both doing their own show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They read the book, mate.
Yeah.
That's what you can be replaced by another Dan in an anchor role. Mm-hmm.
Don't be a Dan.
Today expects you to be trained. It expects you to educate yourself constantly and bring something new to the table. Mm-hmm. So that's probably another example.
Yeah. Well, Mr. 97's word of the year.
Yeah. There are two of them, but yeah.
Lean in. It's all about leaning in for him.
Leaning in. So I think
that plays into that education and sort of learning. And
yeah, immersing yourself in what you're doing and mm-hmm. yeah.
More trying new shit, yeah.
All right. So I wonder where the key key person of influence method.
Big graph.
It's a nice big graph. Oh, man, I should have done more highlight. I did like two highlighting things. Step good. One. Okay.
Look good is impressive. A key person of influence.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
Number padding, one, pitch. Your perfect pitch is so much more than you think. The truth is what a perfect pitch with a perfect pitch, you will be swamped with opportunities. So this chapter is about how do you pitch your idea, your business, your mm-hmm. goals
yep.
to someone really clearly? Because I find this all the time with startups.
Yeah.
When you say, oh, so what's your startup? Like, oh, you know, we're like consulting innovations, you know, problem solving, whatever. And like, I don't know what you mm-hmm. do. Yeah. So many companies.
Agile.
Like, yeah.
Tinder meets
yeah.
Airbnb.
Yeah.
No, I guess that's more specific. Yeah. So how do we do it? Because
we're not good at the pitch. Necessarily.
And also, if we're going to use the startup example, you've got the fluffy startup, but then I also think you've got the real, like, fucking ability, like Jules Lund mm-hmm. with Tribe to just, it's a marketplace, blah, mm-hmm. you know, he just nails the pitch, right?
Yeah.
But then
can inspire people and people go, I know what you're talking about, let me connect with that.
Which I think a lot of these new startups, their business models are so specific and have had to be thought out with that pitch. And then the nuance of freelancing model, like I do a bit of this, do a bit of that. Like people still trying to find their feet of what I'm actually doing, what service am I providing, what value am I bringing. When you're working that out, it's hard to have the pitch down pat.
Right.
Don't you think? Like when you're like,
well, it's, yeah, I guess so. I guess if it's not clear in your head and it's flexible and it's too movable, then I guess you want how you achieve that pitch to be flexible, but you don't want the pitch to be flexible. So does that make sense?
So it's knowing your audience. Who are you speaking to at that moment? What do they even give a shit about? Which takes a level of sort of being in the moment to work out, okay, Simon, you're a comedian. We make videos. How can we relate? If I'm telling you about what we do as a business or the show, like which one do we bring up?
If you're an HR professional, we might say at the Daily Talk Show is about serving the future of work. People aren't working in offices now. They're spending more time working from home.
Yeah.
And there's an opportunity to create something consistent that they can listen to every day that is beyond the typical commercial radio. Commercial radio is like a broad audience. It's geo-specific.
Right.
We're providing something different.
Yeah, right. We're keeping company during your workday, which is not normal anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's relevant not just startups, relevant to music brands and to things like that. So like a startup example is my cousin has one called Traveling Tradies, and for a while the pitch was a little bit like it was difficult to nail down. But now what it is he provides Australian tradies with holiday experiences in developing countries who need tradies to help their local communities.
Oh, that's cool.
Awesome.
And so it took him a while to, I hope I did it justice, to nail that down. But when if he can pitch that to everyone, when people go, what do you do? And he can say that, oh, I help developing countries get things fixed in their communities by sending Australian tradies over for holidays. Mm-hmm. It's great. He did that on the Today Show, and he does that in, you know, pitch meetings, things like that. People go, oh, I get it. I know what helping developing countries, amazing. Giving tradies, you know, a holiday is, you know, important too, because mental health in that industry is really important. So he has done really well now to lock that down. And now how he goes about it, whether it's through an app, that has changed. Like, oh, the website, we've got to get the website right. Oh, we're going to do it manually. No, that's too much. Okay, we'll do it through an app. Like, so how he gets to there will be flexible. But the core pitch has been pretty well locked down now. So,
Josh, when you left yesterday, I kept watching Jason Calacanis or something.
Jason Calacanis. Yeah, so he's got This Week in Startup, a podcast he's had for like 12 or 14 years.
It's a video show, right, though. If you're going to see it, check it out on YouTube, because you see. So there was like the one I was watching was a bunch of Aussies, and he's like, he's sitting down at his desk and they're standing up. So he's got them standing up and he's sitting there and he's, all right, you've got a minute and a half, you get 2 minutes or whatever it is. Pitch. Now pitch.
Yeah.
But then he's so brutal after, he's like, look, your pitch was terrible, but you're great. Right. Just like,
it's a bit of Gordon Ramsay going on.
Yeah. And so I saw like someone cramming in information into the pitch. So it was like a lot in it.
Yeah.
But not much connecting to what the idea is or what the thing is.
Well, I reckon we need to do a better job of it. I was thinking about, like, so 100%. For instance, from a video point of view, you could say, we do video production for all different types of brands. What Jason Calacanis says is use an actual real world example.
Yeah.
So for us, the real world example would be we worked with a company called Landbuild. They were working on a site in Geelong to rebuild the beach house, which was a iconic area in Geelong where there's going to be a cafe and all that sort of thing. And we filmed the whole process from start to finish with them dealing with the council, speaking with the client that is putting the whole cafe together. Mm. And by the end of it, they ended up with a video that they can show to other potential clients with, this is what we do, this is how we make it. I did a shit job.
No, I know. But so then the second attempt, how do you lead with the problem?
Yeah.
So we're in video production. Construction companies creating these amazing buildings and structures, and people see the final product, but they don't see the journey along the way, the hard work that was put in. Mm. We help Landbuild capture over 4 months the development of one of their greatest developments that they've been a part of. Blah, 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 blah.
Or maybe even
and like, well, the yeah, final product.
You, or something around
maybe
trust.
You say we help people tell their stories of triumph.
Well, the thing is,
or success, but or
for a lot of people, it doesn't necessarily explain the specific. Like, I guess there's something in the specificity of it where you say, like, one of the things with builders is it's really a process of them entering tenders or putting themselves forward for tenders.
Yeah, like
tenders are based on trust and pricing. Mm. Pricing is very easy. You can look at a spreadsheet. You can see how much something costs. Trust really is something that's less tangible.
Right.
And so what we do is we help bring that trust element by putting together videos that communicate their history and how they've done it previously.
Their processes, their interactions with the client. So you get a tangible sense of how they go about development.
Right.
And we capture that and
take it out.
Yeah,
what's going on? No. Okay. Well, look, I'll go back to the book and see what they reckon perfect pitches are. Here are some excerpts from perfect pitches that changed the world. I have a dream. Oh, well, great. Martin Luther King. That is such a bad sign in a book. I have a dream that someday this nation will live up to its creed that all men are created equal, right? You must be the change you want to see in the world, Gandhi, and things like that. Oh, man, this is so tough.
They're going pretty high.
They're going really high. I think, oh, man, there was a section where he put it really well. When people say, well, what do you do? And you go, oh, I'm a builder. Mm-hmm. You go, oh, okay. Then that sort of label, that's uninspiring. Yeah. But if it's like, hey, what do you do? And you go, oh, I make senior people's lives, better by adjusting their house to suit their medical conditions. Mm-hmm. You go, oh, that's really awesome. Yeah. So I think that is that specificity that you talk about. So
it's saying how you're solving a problem.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, I guess I've heard, vision.
I went to a seminar and it was like reverse engineering it. So it's like there was some process that they went. But it's like, yeah, leading with that kind of like, you're not even, they don't even know what you do yet. Mm-hmm. They understand the sort of the value you bring. So like that's, yeah, we help. Like a wedding photographer, you know, it's like special moments, mm-hmm. you know, like entering into the emotion before you've even said the thing. So you should sort of lead the thing. But I mean, this is not human interaction. If we're at, if I'm at a party and someone does that to me, yeah, I'd be like, this guy's like fucking a bit.
But so if you do it in a story, if you wrap it up in a story.
You're trying to wrap it up in a story, but you're also trying to be a human. Mm-hmm.
Which like, is, yeah.
You're not in pitch mode mm-hmm. necessarily when yeah. you're at the pub or at a party. Like,
oh, here's an example, right? Here's doing that, right? So from to what, right? What do you do? Oh, I have a PR agency. We do work on brand endorsement deals, right? That's the basic
boring.
One. Boring. Two, I run a PR agency. We specialize in matching celebrities with product endorsement deals. These deals make money for everyone involved and last for years. We've done deals for big businesses right through to startups.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm an M&A consultant from this. I'm an M&A consultant. I help businesses grow through acquisitions. Two, I specialize in mergers and acquisitions. I help companies to buy out a competitor without using any cash. Many of my clients have doubled their revenue in a single deal. Mm. So
yeah, very clear off. Yeah. You understand what you get in that.
Yeah.
As a comedian, how do you go about like
– how do I do it?
Well, no, I mean there's a part where – having a like being mates with a lot of people and being the person that people love would contribute highly to you getting jobs. You know, let's say that you're a baseline comedian, you're funny.
Yeah.
People think you're funny, you get laughs. You're also the guy that's loved. I think that comedian over the nailed cell that has an that has the same set, the person that's loved, so the person that is able to, I don't know, nurture relationships.
It also depends on if it's corporate. Like if you do, if it's a corporate client, they're probably thinking, is he going to be, is he going to stay within the boundaries of
yeah, it being appropriate? Yeah, so in the corporate world, it's like, are you clean? Are you going to get me in trouble? Mm-hmm. So the first thing you go, hey, I've done this so many times, I'm not going to get you in trouble. I'm going to get you, you know, people applauding and congratulating you for booking booking me. Right, so that's like the number one thing because it's always like, you know, a PA who's doing it or some companies have like, you know, the event organizer or whatever and they are under the pump. If they book a comedian, that's great because relatively cheap compared to like a dance crew or a band or a big, you know, celebrity, a illusionist or something like that, lots of props or whatever. So comedian is like great, on budget, but what's the risk factor? Are they going to get complaints? Like, I can't believe the comedian said this sort of stuff. It's so offensive. And that's happened. I've had before corporate gigs, people call me like, mate, I'm under the pump. You know, like a couple of years ago, we had a comedian who was a bit misogynistic and like, you know, a lot of backlash and made, you know, my job rides on this. And I'm like, don't book a comedian then. But, but I was like, mate, I've got this, right? I am clean and accessible and inoffensive and you're going to have a great time. And so that in the corporate world, yeah, that's a big value. And so your brand recognition, like if you're on TV and radio a lot, on TV and radio, you have to be clean generally.
Yeah.
So that's why they probably rely on those sort of people more. So yeah, brand recognition in that sense, if you've got a clean comedy brand, how well known is that? That's important. But in terms of like, the networking side of things, that's important because it's a very, I know it's unregulated in the sense of like being, you know, super funny as a comic doesn't necessarily guarantee you getting spots. Like you got to not be a dick to the room bookers or the TV people and you got to be good to work with. So I know there are comedians, you know, if I have a choice between two comics, one I know who's pretty funny, like we'll do the job, but I can work with them really well. I'll pick that comic over someone who's super incredibly like brilliantly funny who I can't, you know, bring into an environment where there's networking and happening. And that's happened before. I've helped comedians who I think are so funny, like the funniest people I've ever seen. They're just so smart and unique and brilliant. And I've given them a gig. They've turned up late. They've offended the bar staff.
How do you offend the bar staff?
by like demanding a free drink because you're a comic rather sure. than asking, oh, hey, man, I'm new tonight. Nice to meet you. Mm-hmm. I'm Simon. How are you going? How does it work here tonight?
Sure.
Is there a drink involved? Don't worry. Rather than like, I'm a comic. I'm meant to get a free drink.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
like stuff like that. So that dude might be hilarious on stage, but if you're not if you're not going to play the game of normal society, you know what I mean? So that is a factor for sure, like some, you know, some level of being likable and accepted because then you just won't get opportunities in the long run. So there's comics who are way more talented than me and other comics I know, but just are not functional.
Yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, there is probably a few of those that slip through and make the mega stardom that then their
everyone always references them, right?
Has overridden the other shit.
Yeah, I think they can have like, they can probably mitigate it enough in the beginning, you know, whatever, and just are nice to the people they need to be. And then when they get into stardom and now they've got like, you know, people orbiting them, you know, to then sort of insulate them from having to be a decent person, you know, or I mean,
look at the savagery of Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes. Like, is he getting those jokes flagged or does he run those past or he just
he
does
He apparently does, but they're like, we're not going to muzzle you. So it's really, so it goes through lawyers. So they all go through lawyers. Yeah. So he goes, the lawyers just go, yeah, there's nothing libelous in here. That's all they care about. The Golden Globes don't want to be sued.
Yeah.
So they go through lawyers. Is there anything we can be sued for? No. Yeah. Then do
Can
that.
Apple sue us for relating them to ISIS? Like,
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it was the Chinese sweatshops.
The sweatshops. And like, then the extrapolation was Apple with their
and ISIS
and their streaming service. If ISIS
had
a streaming service, people would be running to their agents to get them a deal with ISIS.
Yeah, but he's in a position enough, like he doesn't need Hollywood in that way.
He doesn't care.
He makes his shows with Netflix. He prays Netflix because he's employed by them. But like he doesn't mind. He can get his projects up and work with the people he wants to work with in his group. And then, he can make fun of those celebs who are in those positions of power and things like that. But, I mean, even those people, though, I mean, everyone's essentially working. Like, on that Golden Globes, Scorsese's work at the table with Al Pacino and Pesci and De Niro, the people he's been working with for, 50 years or whatever. And then Tarantino's at the table with DiCaprio and I think Brad Pitt. So he's worked with those dudes before. It's just like you find your people and you're good to the people around you and that kind of – and, you know, you work on the projects that you want to work with, want to work on. And, don't do anything to – because I think it comes back to bite you eventually. If you're alienating people and burning bridges, for sure.
Especially now.
With comedians, obviously there's a lot of different formats. So there's that corporate stuff, there's the stand-up. You were doing the Sunday Experiment on the Hit Network.
Yeah.
Which was sort of like a radio format.
Yeah, radio gig. I really liked that.
Yeah, how'd you find that?
I liked being on air because it felt like a performance.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, this happened with my girlfriend today. Here's a, you know, it's... You know, in many ways, it's getting my list of premises that I was looking at earlier, joke premises, and just getting to basically do them with one other person. So I enjoyed that performance element to it. Live radio is really enjoyable. The stuff around it can be difficult, like the meeting beforehand, stressing out about, you know, the show and what to do and what not to do. And then afterwards, you know, feedback and all that sort of stuff. Like the world around it can be very stressful.
But is it good stress or is it unnecessary?
I don't want it in my life. Can I just turn up and do the performance bit?
And what do you think the answer is? Can you?
I think I can. However, I feel like I can be consistently... Well, I think someone like Husey, for example, I think he... certainly prepares, but he's so clear on what he is now. Like he's so consistent, he's consistently funny, his point of view is clear that they know what they're getting with him. And so I reckon...
But that only happens over time.
That happens over a long period of time. Yeah, totally. So to answer the question, at this stage, they're probably like, oh, are you going to be, you know, brand friendly? Mm-hmm. Are you going to do anything that, you know, upsets a network and whatever? And also I think producers want to have a hand. They want to put their fingerprints on you into some mm-hmm. degree. Like, oh, I want to have a hand in molding you into a perfect, you know, radio presenter.
So what sort of feedback would you get?
I didn't read it.
And do you
it
think
it was that, written? That was kind.
And I got the emails.
And so, from a them. Feedback point of view, where do you? What is your relationship with? Because I guess from a development point of view, feedback, and you're good at feedback in regards to, is the audience laughing, listening? Right, you are a good listener.
Well, if it's for an audience, I think what happens is when you get into other media forms, you're trying to please all these different groups. So mm-hmm. first of all, trying to please an audience. Why? So they watch or they listen or they come to a show because they're the lifeblood of what you do. Without an audience, there's nothing. So you step one, you learn how to please an audience. Great. Now you do that. And now marketing gets involved. Well, we've got this sponsor and they don't want you to mention this, 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 mm-hmm. or this. So now you're trying to please an audience with all these caveats. And you're like, okay, well, that's fine. You know, you could probably work it out. A lot of the time you can integrate things and, you know, you could do product placement and whatnot. And I think, like, Ellen DeGeneres is pretty good at working in something super funny with a brand in. And that's fine. That's problem solving. That's using creative thinking anyway. But then you've got, like, a producer who just has an opinion of, like, well, I want it done this way. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you start to get tension. You're like, well, why?
Yeah.
Because the audience doesn't want this and they don't want that. It's like, how do you know? Yeah. You're not performing to them. Mm-hmm. You're not connecting with them. You don't know. So I've
are
had,
there good
I've had
producers and bad producers?
Yeah, totally. But some good producers will give you a framework to create in.
What does that look like?
So, for example, like a late night talk show or something like that. When you want to go on that, they're like, well, it's got to be clean and we want it to have, you know, three different bits in it so we can edit it for length. Because mm-hmm. if you do one long routine, it makes it super hard for them to edit. So they'll give you something like that and you go, that's fine. I can do that. I can find three small routines that if you need to cut one of them for time or cut part of it for time, it's not going to ruin the set. I'll keep it clean so you don't get in trouble with the FCC or whatever. Mm-hmm. Fine. When there's when they look at your set, they go, send me a tape, and look at your set, they go, yeah, that won't work for our audience. And you go, what do you mean? I've been doing that bit across America mm-hmm. for, you know, 7 years. It does work. I know it works. I've been in there with the crowds hearing them laugh. I've got audio recordings of them laughing and them going, no, I just don't think our crowd will get it. I'm like, they will. I know they will because mm-hmm. I've done it. I've done mm-hmm. the testing. So when their opinion supersedes your evidence, that's a bad producer mm-hmm. because they don't know. But I've got the evidence to prove that, you know, the bit works or the bit is palatable. So when they try to subjectively alter your piece of work, your stand-up or whatever the, you know, art form is, that's a problem. When they're doing it based on, you know, legal requirements, like we can't at this time slot swear, fine. Totally fine.
Mm-hmm. What about co-hosts? So you've got like the producer side of things and then when you're doing a show, you are co-creating with someone else. So yeah. It's like it's one of those things where it's like you're co-creating, I guess, with an audience as well if, you know, in a lot of ways. But if you've got someone that you're speaking to, their responses, where they go down, that if you're thinking – punchlines or a destination for a story.
Totally.
How
and they railroad it. Yeah. Well, that's another factor. So that's, you know, that's another, I guess there's a bit of trial and error with that. Like, you know, finding the good, you know, someone to work with. Like Hughie and Kate were like the perfect duo. Mm-hmm. I thought, and then Ed Cavalier came on. I'm like, oh, they're perfect as well. And I was like, oh, these people are just all just really good at listening to each other and giving each other. They're just sort of, you know, highly capable people.
So if it's universal, if you can sort of, there's some qualities that work well together Is it listening? Is that what it is?
I think, yeah, I think listening is important, and knowing when to, yeah, listening, but also knowing what to do with that information, like knowing when to come in and knowing when to let someone go. I think that's important. But I don't know a lot about radio because I'm pretty new to it. So I'm enjoying it. But, yeah, just it. I just feel like sometimes a lot more layers are piled onto it than need to be there. Mm-hmm. If it's stand-up, it's me and the audience. That's all that matters, really. If it's radio, it's you and your co-host. That's all. If you guys are having a good time, then hopefully the show then will do well. And I think that happened with Joe and Limo on Gold. So there was this amazing period where – so they were, I think, number two or number three or something like that in the ratings, and because they had a producer who would produce, I think, a bit – I think there were just so many notes coming. There was, you know, all these, you know, notes coming. But the head of programming decided, oh, I'm going to ditch Joe and Limo at the end of the year anyway, so I don't care. And the producer got fired. So the head of programming was like, well, I'm not going to hire another producer because I'm ditching them anyway. Mm-hmm. So for 6 months, they didn't have a producer. And the show was so good because they got to do what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have all these intense, you know, notes and pressure from a producer. So they became number one in those 6 months because the show was so good that all they got to focus on doing was their chemistry and making a good show. So it can be in like a producer can be suffocating when what they think they're doing is steering. So if you have a good producer that can encourage and affirm and reinforce the good things you're doing and can help you avoid the, you know, shitty things you're doing, then that's great. But if they're stifling, then, you know, it's better just not to have one. Mm. So
the Melbourne Comedy Festival starts, is it March or April? When does the Comedy Festival start? You should know.
Yeah, end of March. Uh-huh. So I'm about to go to Perth for Perth Fringe World and do first 2 weeks of Feb. Then I'm going to do 5 weeks in Adelaide, so from Feb to March, and then end of March I'm going to do Melbourne Comedy Festival, and then after that I got Sydney Comedy Festival. Back to America.
Where do you live in these, like Adelaide, where do you stay for 5 weeks?
I've got a friend in Adelaide that I stay with. I've got a girlfriend in Melbourne that I live with, that I stay with. She lets me stay with her.
Perth, are you doing?
Perth, I just got a hotel in Perth for 10 days, yeah.
Right, living hotel life for 10 days. Do you like that life? Do you like?
I prefer living with my girlfriend. I like that.
Good answer.
Yeah. Yes. Her dad watches the show, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So in Kentucky, because when we started dating, he would look up everything that I've been on online. So he'd seen the doco we made together.
Oh, great.
He'd watched this show because he brought something up at dinner. He's like, oh, that's like in that daily talk show, you mentioned this. I'm like, so, you know, shout out to all the Kentucky viewers.
There you go.
So good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like traveling and seeing new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But after a while, things can get mundane. So, like, for example, I loved going to the UK last year and I went to Ireland and I started in Cork, the south of Ireland, did a gig. Next day, caught a train all the way up to Northern Ireland and did a gig that night in Belfast. And that was awesome. But if I had to do that, say every 6 months, I'd be like, ugh, gosh, work.
Mm. So you're going to be tired by the time you get to Melbourne?
I'll be fine because in Adelaide, I just really look after myself. Mm-hmm. Like lots of go to the gym, eat really well, do my shows.
Have you got it all dialed in? Like you know where your gym's going to be, you know the cafes and stuff you're going to go to?
Yeah, I know my supermarket, everything. I've done, this will be my 10th year doing festivals.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've got it down and I don't go party. Like, in fact, anything, Husey and I will hang out because we don't drink.
Yeah.
So we'll go hang out and we'll have a nice dinner or something like that and we'll chat a bit, but then we're done. So when I first started doing festivals, I'd be like, oh, all the partying's happening.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm up to 3 a.m., you know, going to, you know, the festival clubs and things like that. So I got it down to a science now that the fun stuff for me is, you know, traveling with my girlfriend and playing board games with people and reading about how to build your business
for
you.
Pitch hard.
Pitching hard.
Our mate, Dr. Jason Fox, was talking about Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, love that game.
If we want to get into it, what's the deal?
Speak for yourself.
You don't want to get into it.
No interest. Oh, you want to get into it? You can buy the books, buy the player's handbook and the Dungeon Master's Guide. Yeah.
Can I get that on World of Books 97? Can you look it up? I want to get a really nice secondhand one.
Yeah.
What's it called?
The Dungeon Master's Guide and the Player's Handbook. You've got to read those two. Or you could find a dungeon master like me. Like I can
You
do
are
it.
A dungeon
yeah,
master?
Yeah, I can do it. But I've written scenarios and things like that. Yeah, I really enjoy it. Yeah, I've played it a lot actually. But
how many times have you been a master?
Dozens, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Lots of sessions. So when I traveled, this is one of the things I did when I traveled, I'd go into a town, just say I'm in Brisbane for a week. I'd set up a game of Dungeons and Dragons at the local board game store and people who'd never played before could come and play.
So what do you wear?
Just my normal clothes. Yeah, it's not that. I guess it's like.
You can't get dressed up?
You can if you want to. Yeah, you can, do it however you want.
A Dungeons and Dragons master would be dressed up.
It's just it's storytelling. It's kind of like improv and storytelling. And so, you know, the dice determines whether you're successful at something. So do you know much about it at all?
Nothing, no.
Okay, so you create a character based on the Lord of the Rings world, basically.
So I have to watch Lord of the Rings? I haven't watched it yet.
But it's that world, you know, like dwarves and elves and wizards and warriors and paladins and things like
that. So I need to know if I was, I guess the manual, the handbook, how much is the handbook going for?
$46 on World of Books or Amazon for $32.
Really? World of Books? What are you guys doing? Because plus 10% too, hey?
I'd go World of Books for sure.
What, just because of the...
Joking. dumb move.
No, but 97 was pointing out because World of Books is secondhand books that you can buy online. Yeah.
You get secondhand through more expensive
book. You can get used on Amazon for $30.
Oh, what about the new ones? I guess we don't
know. Brand new is 32.
How many pages?
Is the book?
Yes.
200 and something?
No, the Amazon.
They're in such good condition because people read them and thought, I'm not doing this.
No, I'm just imagining like really, I want to get one that's got some history to it.
Yeah, right.
So
some lore.
Yeah, so I bought the Judd Apatow book, Sick in the Head, on World of Books and it was a like a pre-release copy. They're just like, obviously it made its way around. It was cool. So it's like a real thick version because it's like got heaps of like padding and stuff.
I don't know if D&D is your game. So the board game world is so huge. There's so many wonderful titles.
Why isn't Dungeon? Why?
I think a strategy game you'd like. Have you played Pandemic?
Is that the one with the rice? Oh, sorry, the hay?
No, Pandemic. No, that's now I've drawn a blank. Catan, I think.
Catan. I think Pandemic potentially.
Pandemic is a strategy game that's cooperative. So you're all on the same team and a disease breaks out around the world or diseases break out around the world and you've got to go around curing the diseases. So you're working together. So he's like, all right, dude, if you go to Hong Kong, then I'm going to go to Los Angeles and I'll cure a thing there. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I think you'd like that because I think you like strategy and discussion.
You get dressed up in that or no cooperation.
You can do that. Yeah, you can dress. You have to dress up as
a naughty nurse. Naughty nurse.
I'll do that. So back on the D&D thing, so we pick either like a dwarf, a wizard.
And you give it a name. Like last time I played, I created a dwarf character that sounds like my nonna. Yeah, so it's like, you know, they're like, all right, the dragon's coming. What do you do? I'm like, I make a pizza for everyone. So we have a full stomach before we go into battle.
Is there a lot of etiquette? Know? Like, can you get real annoying with D&D?
Yeah, there's etiquette for sure. Yeah.
What's some of the etiquette?
The etiquette is not talking over people, letting people play their turn out. Because if, you know, you're a character. Have you seen Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
Yeah. So just say you're playing an elf like Legolas or whatever, you're an archer. And there's, you know, I don't know, there's a creature that you want to kill, like a vampire or whatever. And
so would I need to know that a dwarf can kill a vampire?
Yeah, like surely in the game, like, yeah, I guess the dungeon master, like if a vampire's there or maybe it's just like a a werewolf or whatever it is.
So and a dwarf like, you need is not killing a werewolf.
No, you could be.
With an arrow.
Yeah, if you got silver arrows, you know what I mean? Like there's law.
And how do
there's
you
law
silver with arrows?
Well, then you got to go on an adventure to work it out. So you've got to speak to characters in the game. So you're in a bar, all right? You're in the tavern. What creature do you want to be? Happy with an elf, Archer?
I'm happy with an elf.
I want to be a werewolf.
You want to be a werewolf character?
Werewolf.
You can be a werewolf character. Okay. So what are you in your human form?
A human form? What is that?
Yeah, so are you in human form? Are you just like a man, a guy? During the day, you're like
Why do I need that?
Because you become a werewolf at night.
Werewolves aren't just werewolves all day.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Can't be a wolf all day?
No, no.
Give you a race. You can be a human, you can be a dwarf, you can be an elf.
To be fair, dwarves are human.
Elf's funny.
Dwarfs aren't human in D&D. Both elves.
In D&D. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. You can be a gnome. You could both be elves.
A gnome?
Yeah.
So gnome's cool. But then your gnome's
annoying.
You could be turn into a halfling, savage. Which is a hobbit.
Can he be Gandalf? Just a wizard?
Yeah, you could be a human wizard.
Okay. No, I know what I'll do. Can I be a wizard and then a werewolf at night?
Yeah. You can be a werewolf when it's a full moon.
Right.
And so you would. So anyone could declare a full moon?
No. I'm the dungeon master. So I would determine what's happening in the world. I create the world. So I'm like the computer. I'm the computer game and I dictate. So you
So what am I? So I'm a werewolf at night and a wizard during the day. Cool.
Okay. So you're a wizard human. Mm-hmm. All right. And we've discussed beforehand that you want to be you're a werewolf or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you get to decide your backstory. Are you looking for a cure? Are you happy to be a werewolf?
So is this my turn?
A path of vengeance? Not yet. This is before the game, you create your character and your motivation for the character. So you're a wizard who has a backstory that you get to decide. When I was a kid, I was bitten by a werewolf, so I became a wizard so that one day I can maybe be able to use magic to cure myself.
And so how long do we each have to describe that story?
As long as you want. We have a session that could go like 5 hours or whatever, however long a session is.
And so is there etiquette around length?
I mean, don't take the piss, but just have fun.
Sev's longest D&D game ever.
Look that up.
Is it like longest?
It takes. You can do like multiple sessions because you level up, your characters level up. So you're an archer, you're a human archer. Whatever you decide your backstory is, like maybe you're, evil and you just want heaps of money, like you're on adventures to get money, or maybe you're, wife's been captured and trying to get it back or whatever it is, you come up with your backstory.
I'm angry at the world. You might find me trying to get donuts, just getting angry.
Great. Perfect. So hangry on the hunt for donuts. Yeah.
And so I'm only a werewolf when it's
when
the moon's up.
Yes.
And also when I'm a werewolf, I become very good at using guns.
Great.
Sniper.
Well, there's no guns in the game I'm creating. There could be. So I think
would I be able to say that or you would say?
We would discuss beforehand. So there's character creation is step one. Then we start the game.
You need to watch Lord of the Rings, Josh.
Yeah, and you know what a werewolf is? It's a big dog. Mm. It's a big wolf.
Yeah. But like
I can't use guns.
But a wild one.
You can't use guns.
But it's all magic.
You're better off with Gandalf.
Yeah.
Gandalf, isn't he from Harry Potter? No.
No, he's Gandalf is from Lord of the Rings.
Who's the big bearded guy in Harry Potter that died?
Dumbledore.
Different actor.
I can't
be
him though.
Yeah. So, okay, you're a wizard and you've got this thing, you're a werewolf, and we're in a tavern.
So how did Tommy get to pick about the donuts?
He just gets to do that.
I bring up the gun thing though.
He gave you the opportunity.
Well, in this current world, we can have guns. We can have muskets if we want, but I would play it in terms of it's like a Lord of the Rings world where it's, wizards and swords and axes and archers and things like that. It's a medieval world.
Okay, sure.
You've seen Game of Thrones?
I don't watch anything. No, haven't.
I haven't seen Game of Thrones. So this world that D&D is set in these medieval fantasy worlds. So they tend not to have guns.
Could I say that I've got the hardest armor in the world?
No. You have to buy armor. So you might start the game with a certain amount of money, gold, or certain, you're all level one characters to begin with. So you've got restrictions on that.
It's really quite easy, Josh.
Yeah.
But so where I just don't understand how the donut thing. I don't understand.
But the donut thing is just like I'm just making shit up
and then all of a sudden
there's personal affectations, right?
I haven't said I want a machine gun.
Your motivation, you could say, I'm on the hunt to get vengeance for the guy who killed my father. I really enjoy eating mutton chops. But if you go, I have the strongest armor in the world, it's like, well, no, that affects the mechanics of the game now.
And so I'm hungry and I'm looking for the best donut.
So Tommy was okay because he didn't say, if he said, I have a bag of donuts, you'd say no.
We could discuss beforehand. I might say, no, you're allowed to start. In the book, in the hand guide, you're allowed to start with certain rations. So if you're allowed to start with certain rations, you go, yeah, I've decided they're donuts. I'm like, that's okay. That's fine. But if you say, yeah, I have a bazooka, you're like, well, no, that's not the – we're playing medieval world. So
you're talking about stage one characters.
Stage one is character creation.
And so
you can decide based on the player handbook how many things you're allowed to have. If he says, I have a truck full of donuts, I'd be like, no, you can't have that. You're allowed 3 days' worth of rations according to the handbook or whatever.
And so – is there a bit of a sense on the first stage of character building that everyone's trying to want? So the reason I picked the strongest armor is because I'm like, well, now I'm invincible.
No, but you haven't read the rules.
You can't do that. So the rule book allows restrictions on what armor you can get.
If you read the book you bought off Amazon.
Does everyone read the book? I was under the assumption that the master reads the book.
No, everyone reads the player's hand guide.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's standard across everyone.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you read the player's hand guide.
How many pages did you say?
It was about 330, I think.
Oh, there you go. But you've got to read it and know in character creation, it's like, well, you have certain stats as well. So your character might be good at athletics, right? So you get to decide. You roll the dice. Yeah. It determines how many points you get.
I'm understanding this in a big way. So it means that
there are restrictions to your character creation.
And so I can say a wizard can cast spells.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you pick the spells based on level one.
And that is in the handbook.
That is in the handbook.
There's a spell list.
Yeah. And so I could go through, I can learn all the spells.
Level one, wizard spells, Dungeons and Dragons. And I think he's allowed to have four or five or something to begin with. Or maybe six or something.
But so the donut thing's stupid though, because medieval they wouldn't have had donuts.
But we can
play. That's a modification.
I can give you guns if you want, you know, but it's a and modification. Then
would you have to say if there's guns?
How annoying would doing this with him be? Real fucking annoying.
No, he needs to read the book. How many?
So there's a lot of them. The first level.
Yeah. There's cantrips and there's level one. Is there?
I'm just on wizard spells level. Oh, yeah, cantrips. Do you want level zero?
Give me cantrips, because cantrips are spells. So this is another rule. Cantrips are spells you can cast as many times as you want with no restrictions. Level one, you can only cast them a certain amount of times before resting.
What are the cantrips?
Give me some cantrips.
So you can have an acid splash.
Yeah, so you can. So just say we're in a scenario, right? You're in a tavern and it's daytime, and you're having some beers, and you're talking about donuts, and you're talking about, trying to find a cure for yourself, and then all of a sudden, a goblin breaks in and with knives and is approaching the barman. Screaming and wailing.
Who's saying that?
I'm the dungeon
So you're
master.
The master.
I'm creating the world.
So you,
I'm the computer.
So you create the scene. So you're saying the goblin comes in,
he's got two knives in his hand and he starts racing towards the barman. What do you guys do?
And then it goes around in a circle?
No, you guys can in this circumstance. Oh, actually it does, yeah. So we would roll initiation, you'd roll the dice. And whoever rolls the higher number. So if you roll one and you roll a five, well, then you're going first because your initiative
lower
is
number.
Higher. Yeah, yeah. So your initiative is higher in this circumstance. So
you one roll, is 11, isn't it? Oh, no, that's another.
No,
guy.
1 to 20. The die is 1 to 20. So you've rolled a one and you've rolled a five or whatever, and the goblin's rolled an eight. So you get to go first. So what do you do?
I won't get bogged down in his
Now
never
you have
higher.
Acid Splash. That's one of your spells. You've also chosen a weapon.
Some good ones. You've also got Firebolt.
You got Firebolt.
Poison Spray.
Mm-hmm.
Ray of Frost.
Yep.
And a True Strike.
Okay. Ray of Frost.
Okay. Can you read Ray of Frost for me? And so
I'm going to freeze the goblin.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see what the spell actually does.
A beam of blue-white light streaks toward a creature within range.
Yep.
Could you say the goblin wasn't in range?
No, it's you can ask me. So in the game, you go, is he within range or how far away? I'm in like 3 feet or whatever. So I think that's 100 or 60 feet or something is the range for a goblin.
Yeah, 60 feet. Yeah, yeah.
And so you know that off the top of my head. And then you do say he's been frozen.
No, what it read the effect of the spell.
On a hit, it takes 1d8 cold damage.
Okay, 1d8 cold damage.
Speed is reduced by 10 feet until the start of your next turn.
Oh, that's good. So it slows it down. That was a really good roll. That was a really good thing. So you're going to roll a d8. I'll do it online. D8 roll. Google has it. Oh, I only
a four
one.
And a three.
No, oh, one, one. A four. So you rolled a four. Oh, no. We'll take this one, the six. Yeah, you rolled a six on a D8. So I have all these stats on a goblin. A goblin will have maybe 8 health or something like that, like 8 hit points.
Oh, really?
It's like a video game.
So he's only got 2 left.
He's only fucked. Got 2 left, yeah. But you won't know that, right? I'll know that as a dungeon master. I'll have the stats behind a shield. But behind like a little, you know, a cardboard
protector.
And I'll know the goblin. Like, I'll be able to say, oh, the goblin is looking really bad. Like he looks like he's about to die.
And so is the goblin playing?
The goblin is playing, yeah. He's me. Okay. So the dungeon
master.
How
many characters do you own?
All everything. Awesome. Everything else other than what you guys play.
Okay. And you would add a character?
They're
how
called
often?
NPCs, how? Non-playable characters, NPCs.
I've heard of NPCs.
Yeah.
But he talks about it in terms of we're all NPCs.
In the real world.
Yeah, he thinks I'm an NPC.
So you've got, let's say, you've got a bow, an arrow, which is D8, and let's say it's D8 plus 2, right? So you can attack and you've got some knives, which are D6 plus 2, whatever, plus 2 points. So what do you want to attack the goblin? It's your turn. Do you want to do something else in the environment? There's a chandelier above. There's some bottles on the bar and there's beer still full. You can do anything you want within the restrictions of the world. You can just pull out a knife and attack him. Mm. You can get beer thrown on the ground to try and make him slip.
I should know the 2 points. Like if I knife him, he's dead because he only had
but
2
you
points.
Don't know
you can't
how
ask
many
me
points.
The points, but you can. I'm telling you what I'm doing as a dungeon master. I've got a point system so when something happens, I know determined.
And if Tommy kills
If I
kills
knife him, he's frozen. He's a bit frozen.
It's slower.
Yeah, he's not frozen. He's slowed down. Yeah.
Okay, he's slowed down.
Yeah.
Getting close, he had knives. So if I try to knife him and he knifes me back,
yeah.
What about if I threw
miss,
some acid?
You can miss.
Threw some acid.
Acid, it will speed it up.
Can you throw acid?
He can't. Tommy's- no. So you're. Oh, I don't know what class you are. Because there's different classes. So there are wizards. There are sorcerers. There are fighters. There are
druid, barbarian.
Druid, barbarian.
I don't know if I've
rangers.
Got the patience.
Yeah, but you don't like non-fiction. Actually, you don't like fiction. Sorry,
yeah.
You hate
made
fiction.
Up shit.
Yeah. So anyway, let's just say you're like Legolas, like you're an archer, you're a ranger, right? Yeah. So you're essentially someone who is in the forest a lot and works with animals, and you might even have a pet with you. Let's just say you wanted a pet beforehand. I think in the rule book you're allowed a pet, a familiar. So you could say, yeah, I have a trusty dog with me or whatever, or I have a bird that's on my shoulder or whatever, and you could get the bird to do things. So
could I say it goes dark, there's a moon, I'm a werewolf?
No, you can't do that because I'm creating the world you're playing
how
within
about
the world.
We get you back on it's after like, Josh has read 300+
yeah,
pages.
No, but it's like imagine you're playing a video game.
Yeah, you can't control the world.
You don't control the world.
But
I'm,
I know the
I'm
weapons
the video
and stuff.
Game.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and
you,
so
can,
but did you?
You can buy certain weapons.
Could I ask, is it nighttime?
No, I said it was
you've
daytime.
You've already said it. Okay.
It's daytime. But yeah, it's daytime. But let's finish this story out. The goblin is now just been attacked. He's slowed down. He's pretty shocked.
Well, I'm going to shoot an arrow because I'm an archer.
Great. So you shoot an arrow at him. I want you to roll, I think, D6 plus 2.
So he's pulling up a
by the way,
app
if,
or something on Google.
Yeah, so Google. So you can roll. So just D6, press roll.
Roll. There's, sorry. And then that
press
one.
Roll, yeah,
press he's got to press
roll. Yeah, press roll.
That one.
You've and rolled three. Oh, actually, no. I have to. I fucked this up. You have to roll D20 first. Why? So D20 determines whether your attack hits or not. That's something I forgot. If anyone's
a D&D lot of time player. For people that would even you understanding this shit.
No, it's because I guess I'm like on the spot and having to do it.
If you're a master, that's.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm having to do it without the dice and without the process. So I'm trying to like explain the game. So D20 determines whether your attack hits or not, and then you roll for damage afterwards. So let's just say you roll D20 and you hit.
Yep.
So I didn't
and then
do
you attack
a
for damage and you rolled 6 and you... No, you didn't. I think some spells you don't have to. I'm not sure if that one... Yeah, I think you do. But you roll D20. Yes, you hit because sometimes you miss. You go, nah, you miss him. The arrow flies off and it smashes through the window and kills someone outside. Damn it. No, you hit, you kill him, he dies. The bar guy says, oh, guys, that was the best. Thanks for saving my bar. Goblins have been so bad. In fact, there's a camp of them outside. Here's 10 gold each for killing that goblin. There's another 500 gold from the town if you guys go kill the goblins. And you go, great, you can accept that mission. Or you go, no, I'm not killing anymore. Yeah, as a team, it's better to stick together.
Yeah,
and so now you either go on the adventure to kill the goblins or you go, nah, we're going to stay in town drinking or nah, I need to find a cure. I'm going to try find a mage in the town. So it's world building. Yeah. You need to know
it's
the
too
rules.
Too much for Josh.
You need to know
too
the
much
rules.
For me, to be honest.
You need to roll the dice. Anyway,
I want to play. I'm surprised. I swear I've seen
but
in movies.
Keep in
they
mind,
get dressed
before
up.
I started half-assed explaining this, I said I don't think this is the game for you.
I think improv. I think I want to get into.
Yeah. Right.
There's a game that's been going for 35 years.
I don't think it's non-stop though.
No. It's not non-stop. They've only the maximum of time that they haven't played a D&D session is 3 weeks.
That's pretty good.
So over the 35 years, they'll sit down and do sessions, but it's just an.
Wouldn't it be great to get them on the show? Game. Whereabouts do they live?
Probably American. Yeah, the start.
And they probably don't come out of their house.
But that'd be easy. We can go to them anyway.
Oh man, I feel so overwhelmed having to do a crash course in D&D in something so nuanced and
it is very nuanced.
To one person who doesn't like that world and one person who had no interest in it.
Well, I didn't know whether I liked the
world. It's such a difficult show for me.
Simon Teller, funny boy.
Oh boy, don't come. I'm exhausted. Soon, starting Feb.
Mm-hmm. Can people get tickets yet? Or?
Yeah. SimonTaylorFunnyBoy.com on my website. There was no D&D in the show.
All right, well, maybe we can do get you back and do a proper game. Maybe we could live stream.
Absolutely
D&D.
Not. Absolutely not.
If I read the book, to be
absolutely
honest.
He doesn't want to play.
You don't want to.
You guys can play it at your book
Would
club.
You play, Sebs?
How long does a session last?
There's lots of time. Listen, if you're not super enthusiastic to play D&D and not enthusiastic to read the book and learn the rules, then don't
watch Lord of the Rings, Josh, and then
no. What about what's the,
easier than reading the book?
What's the disease book? The
pandemic. Yeah, that's fun.
I've heard of pandemic.
Pandemic's a cooperative game.
Can you look that up? I'm going to buy the board game. All right, it's a daily talk show. Thank you, Simon Taylor.
Thanks, Brad.
If you enjoy the show, leave us a podcast review. Hi at thedailytalkshow.com.
Please don't tell me I messed up rules in D&D. I wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, email us.
I know I missed a whole bunch of stuff. It was so hard to
There's a lot of pressure. I can.
You did well.
Thanks.
I mean, we don't know.
Yeah, so that's why.
I should have just said, it's a role-playing game, Josh. Read the book. That's what should have happened today.
Instead.
15 minutes.
Yeah. All right.
Was that all it was? All right. See you tomorrow, guys.
Thanks.